Welcome to the Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. I'm Matt Cadle, sabbatical pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church and Campus Ministry, Los Angeles, California. That makes it sound like I'm currently the sabbatical, the pastor filling in for someone on sabbatical. That's not the case. I'm a pastor on sabbatical. I gotta adjust that. Who are you?
I'm Zach Pierce. I am the 2023 homecoming preacher at Cedar Grove Lutheran Church in Vail, North Carolina, man.
Has that happened yet?
Mission accomplished.
Nice. Well done. Mm-hmm. Did everyone come home?
Everybody came home. It was a little surprising because there were people there who I didn't expect to be there, Matt. I don't know if you've had that experience yet as a preacher.
like what? Like who?
People I went to elementary school with, like grew up with and stuff.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah, they just happen to go to church there now. So that's weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great to see them and stuff, right? But it's the like juggling identities piece that's weird, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's weird enough, like homecoming stuff when a bunch of people, you interact with, you inhabit religious leader identity around people whose primary experience of knowing you is outside of that, you know, mm-hmm. and like predates all of that.
Right.
And having to hold those things together. But typically they're in the church world, but even these like weren't like, these are just people, right? Like who know me as the person who was in middle school with them, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That would be weird. Did you get to talk to them all afterwards?
Yes. There was a covered dish afterwards. It's lovely. Appreciate it. A lot of the family came up out, so that was good. The thing that was kind of neat, I'd never done this. This hasn't happened to me before. There was a gift basket, man. I got a gift basket.
A gift basket? What was in the gift basket?
There are apples.
Nice.
Presumably from that part of North Carolina, they grew a lot of apples. Mm. Presumably some local apples, which is lovely. Some pottery. There's like a pretty prolific potter in that congregation. So I got a lovely, like a really beautiful mug. And this like little sculpture figurine thing that is a thing. My favorite thing that was in there was the homemade wine. There's a bottle of homemade wine from West North Carolina that I'm looking forward to opening up on a special occasion here soon.
Homemade wine.
I know I haven't had much of Western North Carolina wine, though it exists. There's a winery out there.
Do they serve it at communion?
I don't think so. We were intincting, so it was hard to get a good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They should, though, shouldn't they?
Right? That's the
I'm sure it's a sweet wine. It's sweet.
Make your own bread and your own wine.
And a Shevitz, right?
Wow. Well, good job. Way to welcome everyone back to homecoming. Mm-hmm.
We came home. I thought I had a pretty good one. I thought that was a pretty good one. Punchline, Matt, was there's no homecoming without exile is where I was kind of the punchline. There's plenty of good news, I think. There's enough good news, but lifting up the like you can't have homecoming if you don't have exile. So what?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice. Good. Good job. Was that the first time you've preached in like 3 months?
Since the wedding, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Jeez.
Almost as long as you.
Back in the saddle.
Mm-hmm. I'd forgotten that I told them I'd do the children's sermon, though.
Oh, no.
Until I was driving up there, and I thought it was okay.
Yeah. I mean,
children's sermons are always really hit or miss, especially when you don't know the kids and the kids don't know you. So
sure, right. Yeah, for sure.
I thought I had a good angle on it, but who knows?
That's good. I mean, you have a kid yourself. Did you bring your kid to the children's sermon?
I did. These days, that doesn't necessarily, it's not like having a plant, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
They're not pulling for you during the children's sermon.
Gosh. Well, you preached at homecoming, but not everyone's coming home, Zach. Not everyone's coming home. Nope. I gave you homework this week.
I did get homework this week.
So we got, last week we talked about current events. We talked about an article that literally everybody that we know in the church world is commenting on. And so some people respond and they're like, hey, great podcast. So thanks for listening. First of all, it's always nice to be reminded that someone else is actually listening to, to us. So that's cool. And then I was like, we should keep doing that. And I've been reading, well, I read two articles, in one morning, and they just, it just feels like a trend, Zach. Just feels like a trend. So, this one I sent you says, it's from NPR. So if you want to pause the podcast, go to NPR.
Pause the podcast.
Search, dear listener, search for, headline is "The Search for a Church That Isn't a Church." And it's by Rachel Martin, NPR voice. I mean, I've heard the name, right? You've got your classic NPR names. Rachel Martin's one of them. Apparently she has a whole series that now I'm going to have to go back and listen to, because I have not listened to anything else in this series, which is called Enlighten Me with Rachel Martin. But I did read this article, The Search for a Church That Isn't a Church. And it kind of begins where she's like, she describes herself as a nun, and like an N-O, not a nun, N-U-N, but a nun, N-O-N-E.
Sister Act.
And that's always interesting, because I feel like I've been hearing about the nuns for like 15 years. But it gets presented like, it's like, oh, it's like a, people are like just discovering this thing. Which again, I'm not trying to be insulting. It's just sort of like, it always just strikes me as surprising, because I'm like, no, that felt like a thing we were all talking about 15 years ago. But I don't know if there's a, it feels to me like there have been a number of these articles recently, and I don't know why. And I'll be interested to get your take on that. But then she interviews somebody who has also sort of left the church world, and then tries to like come back in, but doesn't really hit anymore. Not really resonating. What's any takes, Zach? Did you do your homework, first of all? Did you do the reading?
Well, Matt, I did. I read the NPR article. Matt's a member of the bourgeoisie. He sent me a New York Times article that I was unable to read because not currently subscribed to the old.
Oh my gosh! I thought you were subscribed. You have like the are you still subscribed to cooking?
I recently got the Rocket app and have curtailed some of my subscriptions.
Oh, wow! Wow! See, Zach pulled me into New York Times cooking, which I don't actually cook, but I am now subscribed to New York Times cooking. But now apparently you're out. You're out of the paywall.
I'll probably get back in next time.
Yeah.
I need to cook something.
Well, I'll do a brief. This is why I sent that article. There's this columnist in the New York Times where every couple weeks, her name is Jessica Gross. She's a good writer, but every couple weeks she writes this article about her experience of, she grew up Jewish. She wants to raise her kids with a set of values and a religious tradition, but she doesn't want to go to synagogue. She doesn't want to go to church. She doesn't want to go to any kind of like religious institution. And she writes these articles like every couple of weeks about this. And I can't, it's kind of driving me nuts, because it's an interesting take. But she makes all these assumptions about people that actually do go to religious institutions that I don't think are true. That's my biggest issue with it. I think it's a really interesting experience, but I feel like she makes all these assumptions like, well, you know, I'm just not a joiner. I don't really consider myself a joiner either, but like,
it's Matt Cadle, like, noted. Well,
right.
That's true. And then
Jill Tatum's like, well, you know, like people who join things just want somebody to tell them what to do with their life. Like what? And I'm like, no, that's not why I go either. Have you ever talked to somebody that attends like, so it just kind of drives me crazy. Then here's this NPR article, which you did read because it's not behind a paywall. When I opened this article today, NPR was like, notice we're not behind a paywall. We do things differently around here. So
donate
That was fun. I do donate to two NPR stations. it was a whole thing for me, Zach. There was a long time. I mean, you know, in my 20s, I was like, I can't really afford this. But someday, I said, someday I'm going to afford to be an NPR regular giver. And I fulfilled my promise. Fulfilled my promise, and now I do that thing. That was a big detour to prevent you from sharing any of your thoughts. So what do you think, reader?
I think I've got a pretty Similar take to you, Matt. Like I feel like I've read a lot of articles kind of like that, or had a million conversations like that. And I felt the part of me that used to would have really wanted to be like, oh, well, that exists. Like those churches exist.
Right.
Like, oh, you don't know about them, right?
Like, right. Yeah.
And so like, you know, certainly don't want to necessarily like poo-poo this person's lived experience. But I don't find like their, if it's an argument, the argument's not super compelling to me, right? Like that's not, you know, those churches exist, that like his, one of his critiques, right, was like, I'm not sure about the Jesus part or like the resurrection part, but I like all the other stuff. Mm-hmm. And he even kind of made the joke about it, right? Like I could be the, like, what did he say, the president of the Unitarians or whatever. Like, mm-hmm. So he's aware Unitarians exist. Like, right. So if the Jesus stuff isn't working for you, Unitarians are there. Like they're a real thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can, they'd love to have you, I bet.
Yeah.
Like it's this whole, like, for me, and how I've thought about church stuff, right, is I think in the United States, in the West, we have a misplaced like understanding of like beliefs. Right. Mm. It's a part of that whole like religion is believing thing that white Protestantism has been really invasive, pervasive in promoting in the United States, and that like that's the most important thing. What a church believes, what I believe. And those things matter, you know. Spent a lot of life worrying about those things. But I think in practice, in reality, you know, it's much more that belong piece than it is about the finding a church with a perfect theology that matches you. Mm-hmm. 'Cause that's not true, I think you would say, right, for people who are members of churches, right? There are probably plenty of people at St. Mark's. There have been plenty of people at Lutheran Campus Ministry at the University of Colorado whose beliefs, number one, aren't static and aren't fixed, and may not and do not necessarily fully line up with the beliefs of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, or my personal beliefs. And so it's, you know, and it's just not like, that's not what, I don't think that's what it's about. Like, I don't think that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I guess the thing that was different for me, cause I mean, you know, like, this was our business until now. We're both on sabbaticals of a kind, but like we're in it enough, have been in it enough that like we've encountered this before. I feel like the thing that is different for me, that was different for me reading it this weekend, was that it wasn't like, it was like, okay, like I could engage this in a debate, but I think really the thing that was, I guess troubling is the word, but that's, is that like, it feels like this is where this is the tide, like that, mm-hmm. like this is just how more and more people are feeling.
Yeah.
And so there are less and less people at church, and you can debate them and maybe you would win some points in that boxing match, but it doesn't really matter because there's just fewer and fewer people who are going to be a part of this thing. Which for me as a person who like, this is my working life, is sort of a weird, yeah. It's like, wow, I didn't get on the, I didn't get in the growing, industry, right? Like this must be, is this a shrinking industry? Clearly it's a changing industry. I know all that language is terrible, but that's sort of the way that I felt thinking about it. So I don't know if that's, I don't know. What does it say about where things are going? Is it just like,
I think I have some lived experience with this.
You probably do. Reality. Yeah. What do you got?
Well, one, a more recent reflection of coming to North Carolina, you know, and just being at Cedar Grove this weekend, immediately I walk through the door there. And I'd never been to Cedar Grove before, by the way. But there were people there I'm related to. There are people there who are a part of communities that I've been a part of, am a part of, right?
Mm-hmm.
People from my, like, the church I kind of grew up in came. They heard I was going to be there, so they came. The old friends from elementary school were there,
mm-hmm.
Right? Like, oh, I'm connected and belong to all these people here in some way, mm-hmm. right? Versus when I did not, and I think that's a mark of, in my opinion, right? Like in my experience, especially of churches like this way in this part of the world, where we haven't fully entered like post-Christendom sorts of things here, versus when I'm living in Colorado, and I go to church and it's a real onus on that community to like demonstrate how I belong there, right? You've mm-hmm. got to like, it has to happen in some way, right? Versus mm-hmm. like a homecoming sort of deal where you go home and there are all these familiar faces. And that mm-hmm. sounded like actually a part of his deal as well, right? Like he didn't,
mm-hmm.
it was Perry Bacon, right? Didn't talk mm-hmm. a ton about as he went on, right? Like I grew up in the church, but when you grew up in the church, it wasn't like, that means you grew up with all these other people and had all these other like communal relationships.
Right.
You know, I, when I first got to Boulder 2011, I was running a lot, fell in with a track club, a training group, right? But it was a lot more than that, right? It was a community of support. It was a church without church, essentially, right? Like it was a place in which I knew great belonging, built trusting, supportive relationships that continue. I'm on this terrible text thread that I've muted because I'll turn on my phone and or I'll look at my messages and I'll have 25 messages because some these morons just keep going back and forth, right? But you know, I've done Thanksgiving with them, with that running community for years and years. We have traditions, we do ritual, we do all those things because they were really good at the the belonging thing at a time when I like, you know, you really need that belonging piece when you move as a 26, 27 year old to a
mm-hmm.
place you've never lived before. Yeah. And then, you know, that continued to be my like professional experience with young adults and stuff is with college students showing up to your church. They don't know you, like you've got, and they're in an environment, working with an institution that is very good at doing the belonging piece and knows that's the need. And so you got to play ball with that, knowing what the playing field looks like. And I don't think most of our churches are built that way, or reformed that way. Right.
Built what way?
That the way the institution and the structure is set up is not in a way that demonstrates belonging, right?
Mm-hmm.
It demonstrates the value that it offers you. And like, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen plenty of Facebook memes of don't ask, you know, John at JFK, right? Don't ask what the church can do for you. Ask what you can do for the church. Sure. But as a person who's not like professionally going to church these days, it's got to make my life better. Like,
right.
This, right? Like, and coming out of that sort of like, push up my glasses, Max Weber-ish sort of like, if you want to be involved in the socioeconomic community of your town, like church is the place you make those connections, right? So you got to be there to be a part of like the society and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that long history of just leaning on that, people are going to come here because like people have asked me here, well, where are you going to go to church? Presupposes that like, oh, well, you would go to church because that's a part of what an upstanding life looks like.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to prove that you need to go to church. We just have to, you know, go to your, as we prepare for an autumn workers strike, before the Japanese got into the market, right? Like there's old jokes about like, there was no like reason to innovate. You just needed to prove that your vinyl like top was better than Buicks or whatever, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
There wasn't like, you're going to buy one of these three cars. So we just got to beat these other two guys, right? We just needed to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, yeah. Yeah. No, that's helpful. And it's helpful to compare that locationally and regionally. And it's probably instructive that these two articles I sent you were from NPR, the New York Times, which is its own, like, particular, which you got it, right? Which is the particular social location. And yet it does still feel like part of a, it seems like things are moving in a direction, and some places are over here and some places are over here, but regardless, like, there is this kind of move from, like, things that we could just take for granted and, like, are just, you can't take those things for granted anymore. And there needs to be some kind of shift. And some of us are going to be able to survive in the Christendom model for a while longer. But it's coming. it feels like it's sort of already here, out west. And even in the city, right? Like, I'm in my own sort of context where, like, there is a really important part of St. Mark's Tapestry that is the Black church, and that is its own, like, that is still a very strong it's I think stronger than a lot of the white mainline. Mm-hmm. And yet still I have seen over the last 10 years this move from, like, I can go once a month and not every week, you know. And that isn't, I don't think that's just a judgment on me, because I mean maybe it is, but people still seem to have the same, but it's just kind of this shift where, like, and some of that was intensified after COVID, I think, where it's just, yeah. So I wonder, like, I think that's really helpful that part of it is, like, this shift from, like, okay, we gotta move the belonging up, and we have to be more intentional because we can't, like, control these things. And also, I just wonder if, like, we just, I don't, yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead. I think this is, so I got some more bad news.
yeah.
I think, yeah, so the tide is real. I think that's, you know, there's a whole dimension to explore here of, like, you know, he talked about how he goes to the farmer's market on Saturday and he sees people he knows, he doesn't shop, and, like, gets community stuff there.
Right, yeah.
Which is all fair and true, right? But going to the farmer's market when you're in town is really low commitment, right? Like, there's no,
yeah.
Farmer's market doesn't ask anything for you, of you, which is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Most farmers markets aren't trying to be churches, but that the church itself, right, is pretty, especially these days, high ass in some regards, right? Like, it's either, like, we don't want to ask you to do anything, or we got to keep the lights on, like, we,
you're right, yeah,
we need you to give, right?
Right.
And even if you're not hitting people over the head with a direct ask, whatever, right, like, just being aware of, like, we're set up as this economic enterprise that needs new members, right? Like, you know, if you're synod staffing and going around to churches that aren't doing great, I don't know, half the council would be like, we need new members because we need to make budget, mm-hmm. right? Like, is the primary reason we need to. Yeah. I like everything the way it is, but we just need to make budget.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's where I think you get to the part where I'm going to hit you with the bad news, Matt, because I feel like you're either in a good spot with this or you're not in a good spot with this.
Ooh, because what does that mean?
There's some, like, self-reinforcing negative cycles here, right? So the folks who like the way things are happening to church that is struggling, they stay.
Yeah.
And the folks who are interested in changing things in a struggling context are less likely to stay.
Yeah.
So churches, as they struggle, become more and more conservative in the sense of, we're not going to make any changes. And so it becomes, you not only need to make the changes and stuff, right, in terms of, like, leadership stuff, right, but you're having to fight this negative cycle where your people who are most invested in the, as things start going south, are the people most invested in likely the things that need to change.
Yeah.
And I suspect those are the things that are turn off to Perry Bacon in particular, right? Like,
yeah, right. Yeah. Well, I think for me, one of the things I'm reflecting on is sort of where does my congregation go from here? And I will, we're in this, I'll just put all our laundry out there that, like, but in a positive way, I feel like we're kind of in this in between space where, like, we are pretty small. But we do have some committed leaders. I think we have people that are open to having new conversations and open to doing new things. And in fact, have started doing a bunch of new things in light of the sabbatical. So we're sort of like in this position of being ready for something new. But what is that thing, right? Like, what am I preparing my congregation for the next 5 to 10 years? And what I don't want to do is say, if you just do these 5 things, or if you just make this one shift, then it's going to all come back to how it used to be, right? Like, that's not, I don't actually think that. I think like 10 years ago, I took all these classes and read all these books, right? Because they wanted to tell you, like, here's how you can revitalize your church. I feel like it's, I don't know. It might just be smaller, guys. Like, we're actually in a different time. And yeah. I just want to, I don't want to just be doom and gloom about it, but I don't want to give, like, if you switch to belonging, then suddenly now we're going to be good, right? And I feel like the belonging is one shift. And then I guess I think maybe it'll take us to some deeper theological questions about, all the classic ones, right? About soteriology and salvation, and what's this thing all about anyway? So, for example, the farmer's market, like, pretty low commitment. Well, is that enough? And maybe the answer is yes. Maybe it's enough to go to the farmer's market and to go to your kid's soccer practice, and you make some friends there, and you have some stuff at school, you've got some birthday parties to go to. Maybe it is enough. And if it's not, what's the piece that's missing? Is it more commitment? Is it, like, what's the thing? Maybe we won't answer that on my podcast, but that's kind of the thread I'm going down, because it does sort of feel, I feel the tide more than ever. And I wonder what that means for the next, assuming I'm not going to retire next year. But I probably got another, when do I pay off my house? In 30 years, left. Which, again, terrible thing, but, like, just if this is the call, what does the call look like in the next 10, 20 years? And maybe that's too far ahead to project, but even the next 5 years, it just, in this new context, what does it look like? So one thing I hear you saying is belonging, which I think is a super helpful shift. And one thing that tells me is that I think I'll need to be even more clear with my, where I think we could tread water a little bit before, I think we have to be even more clear with, like, no, this is the context we're in, and this is what the priority needs to be. And we don't control what the outcome of that's going to be, but this is the shift that we've got to make, and we've got to make it clearly.
One more nugget of bad news before we move on.
Give us some bad news. That's why people come to this podcast, for bad news.
The bad news podcast. Something that occurred to me, you know, I'm trying to scale it out a bit, right? And, like, think of larger trajectories. I just can't imagine many people my age or myself, right, being as committed to a congregation, both financially, in terms of showing up and stability, the same way that I feel like my, like, grandparents' generation are.
Yeah. Right?
Like, and I don't know, you know, a part of that perhaps mobility piece, right? Like, I'm way more likely to feel that sort of social pressure and buy into it in a place like Cedar Grove, where there's all that other stuff going on, right? Versus, you know, where most of the places I've lived my adult life aren't that. And I'd probably be pretty quick to be like, well, that's not for me. So just keep it moving.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. It's probably not good. Well, it's probably not good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we solved all these problems.
Yep, that's what we do on the podcast. We take things apart all the way. We throw all the pieces on the ground, and then we always clean up our mess.
Well, dear listeners, thanks for listening to 30 minutes of this analysis of, again, the article is called The Search for a Church That Isn't a Church. And it's by Rachel Martin. So go check that out. And if you have thoughts about this, let us know. Cause we're scratching the surface.
Link in the episode description. I mean, another way to look at it too, right, would be to like, to tie back into last week's conversation, right? Like, I wonder if an element of the Nadia-ification of clergydom is in part a response to the feeling of impotence of the like church as it is, right?
What do you mean?
Like churches being smaller and stuff, right? The feeling part of the thought at least being, I will be more impactful if I can find a way to broaden the audience or to connect more with a low commitment, quote unquote, church.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. All right. We're going to put a pin in that one and come back to it. And I'm going to write down Nadiification.
The Nadiification.
Friend of the pod.
Big friend of the pod.
Oh, well. As we move into the text, I'm just once again reminded that this is the context in which we preach, if we do indeed preach. So with that in mind, you know, let's approach these texts again. Like one of the things in these articles where it's like, you know, I just can't believe things like religious people believe. And my response is like, do you think I don't also struggle with these things, you know? And so then maybe the question is, why do you read these scriptures at all? And I think for me, I keep coming back to, I think there's something here because they've been around for a couple thousand years. So there must be something. And I'm not always sure what it is, which is why we return to it on a podcast week after week.
We'll be the judge of that today, Matt.
Is there something here? We'll be the judge of it. There's something here.
Our last episode, we're going to say, nope. And that'll be the end of the podcast.
So let's see what these texts have to say to us in this third week of September. September 17th, 2023. Genesis 50. 15 to 21. Oh, what a great text. This is realizing. So we're at the end of the Joseph narrative. Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. He's had his dreams. He's been sold into slavery. He interpreted some dreams. He became king. He's the minister of hunger and famine and all that stuff. And his brothers come to him looking for food. And this is where we find them. That's where we find them. I think he's just been revealed to them. Is that what's happened? That already happened before this. Yeah. So they left out so much good stuff where he like pretends to not, you know, recognize them. It's great. They've now realized that this is indeed Joseph, the brother that they sold into slavery, a long time ago. Oh shit. And here's how it goes. Realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brother said, What if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did him? So even further along, because now they were like, you know what? Joseph forgave us all those years ago, but really he only did it to like please our father. And now the dad is gone. All bets are off. So realizing that their father was dead, Joseph's brother said, it's even better. I mean, you could just, this whole text will preach in itself. You know, it's so, should I just read it and stop commenting on it? Joseph's brother said, what if Joseph still bears a grudge against us and pays us back in full for all the wrong that we did to him? So they approached Joseph saying, your father gave this instruction before he died. They make up a story. Say to Joseph, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now, therefore, please forgive the crime of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. And then his brothers also wept and fell down before him and said, we are here as your slaves. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones. In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God.
So, incredible little story. When I started, I was like, oh, this is like the Joseph forgives. No, this is even later than that. This is even later. He already forgave them once. And then they're like,
forgive
them
once.
They lose. They're like,
now the dad's dead. Joseph might feel a little less restricted by the communal societal pressures to not murder us.
It's incredible. So it's yet another expression of forgiveness on Joseph's part, or at least, and it's not even forgiveness in terms of feeling, it's forgiveness again in terms of action, where Joseph says, no, I'm going to provide for you. I'm not going to murder you. I'm going to preserve you. I'm going to provide for you and your little ones who are running around here. And it includes this famous line, even though you intended to do harm to me, God intended it for good, which again, we
find these texts in different ways.
Yeah, that's what I'm... There's a great line.
We can all agree.
There's a great... All right, I got... everything happens for a reason, which one of my members said, Pastor, it's just like you always say, everything happens for a reason. And let me tell you, dear listener, I've never said those words. People hear what they hear. And it made me really laugh because I picked up the latest Gregory Boyle book, the bookstore today. He has this great story where he says one of his homies came to him and said, you know, I remember that day that you looked at me and said, God has a plan for you. And I'll never forget that you said that to me, Father Greg. And he goes, Greg Boyle says, now all of us know our own lexicons. God has a plan for you is not in my toolbox. I know I didn't say it because I don't believe it. And he goes in this whole thing about God having a plan.
Yeah.
But it is a common thing, right? People will, they hear that you care about them and they will translate that into language that is meaningful to them. Anyway, to circle back around, you can read this in different ways, right? So it's like these articles where like that we read that people go, I can't believe religious people believe this, that just God is a puppet master. That's not actually how I read this text. I would read it, and I think that we have the ability to read it in a different way, that like, yeah, you intended to do harm, but God took that moment and God turned it into something good. That it wasn't necessarily that God was like planning it all along. You could read it that way if you wanted to. I don't think that leads to very good places. I think that's going to set you up for some pretty bad disappointment. But if you say God can take a bad thing and turn it into a good thing, or pull a good thing out of it, or maybe turn it and send it in a better direction, that actually might have some good news.
More of a swords into plowshares.
Ooh, there you go.
That's what.
Way to say it much more succinctly than me.
Check out This Fool, season 2 is out on Hulu. It's perfect. It's so really good. Which is a takeoff on. It's not a takeoff. Like, it's not full parody. It's parody for sure. But it's got a heart in it. It's not a...
It's not
making fun of Homeboy Industries, but it's very loosely based on the idea of Homeboy.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I've got for Genesis. I think it's going to play into the gospel too. But what do you have?
This isn't a strange part in the story. Like, it's not where you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense, right? Like, I first started reading it, like you, Matt, and I imagined, oh, we're in like Pharaoh's throne room when they come before him and like all that kind of stuff, right?
I remember this part, yeah.
But that's already happened. And then there's a whole like death scene.
Yeah.
And like Joseph is there at the death. Like, he's not like learned, like a lot of some stuff has happened. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if it is this like extra level of good newsness in that. Kind of from the perspective of the brothers or anybody in the ancient Near East, the ability to achieve peace is incredibly difficult and requires balancing lots of different things and everything coming into place. That's how it feels, at least, right? All of this stuff is happening. There's famine. We tried to kill him because we made a bad choice back then, right? Like, all of this stuff happening, but then miraculously enough things fall into place. He forgives us. We've got it made, right? And, you know, we'll have some difficulty, I think, reading the father piece into it, right? Like, and why Jacob's death would matter. Like it is, it's a guarantor in a way, right? Like it really helps that Jacob's still alive and wants his sons to get along. Because when he's not there, all of a sudden that delicate balance is offset, right? Like in this peace, this salvation, right? Like this wholeness that is so difficult to find, it's thrown off. And it took miracles to happen. And now it's completely, you know, the chessboard's knocked over.
Yeah.
And this is the good news that, like, no, that's not. That might be what it takes to, for you to turn your like swords into plowshares, for humans to do that work.
Yeah.
But the good news of God is not that delicate and.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So as much as I was laughing at these brothers, I think there's that take, that equilibrium being, being thrown off is such an important thing. And I think there's another way to read this, where that, I mean, this is actually a thing that happens, that the patriarch in a family dies, a grandfather dies, and the family kind of falls apart, or they kind of drift away from each other, right? Like, that's a thing that happens, even closer to home. I know, like, when my dad passed away, like, we didn't all want to kill each other, but it definitely changes the equilibrium within a family, right? And so it does... I think the good news that you suggest, right, that God's love is not that fragile, that God's good news is not that fragile, that like even when the equilibrium in our lives changes, God can still speak into that and do a new thing, that God still preserves us, that all these, so you could actually, I think there's a sermon there too, right? Particularly in the wake of all the grief of COVID and wherever your people have to be, when the equilibrium changes, guess what? There is still good news in that. That's really good. Thanks for that, Zach. Thanks for that good news.
Bang! Well, Matt, let's read a little bit of the explicitly good news, the Gospels. Coming out of Matthew, Peter came and said to Jesus, I got my calculator here. And if I forgive another member of the church who sins against me, I'm going to reset. Peter came and said to Jesus, Lord, if another member of the church sins against me, how often should I forgive them? As many as seven times, which is a big number in literal and metaphorical
Jesus
ways.
Jesus said, nah, just six. It's fine.
Nope. That's way too much. I don't know why you're thinking that big.
Whoa, what a goody two-shoes over here. Seven times, huh?
Dumb question asker over here. Jesus said to him, not seven times, but I tell you, 77 times. That's Ooh. Like infinity. Oh my gosh. There's your children's sermon. Google, which is, used to be a number. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. And when he began the reckoning, the one who owed him 10,000 talents was brought to him, and he could not pay. The Lord ordered him to be sold together with his wife and children and all his possessions, and payment to be made. And so the slave fell on his knees before him, saying, have patience on me. I will pay you everything. And out of pity, the Lord released him and forgave him the debt. But that same slave, as he went out, came upon one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii, and seizing him by the throat, said, pay what you owe. Then his fellow slave fell down and pleaded with him, have patience and I will pay you. But he refused, and he went and threw him into debtor's prison until he would pay the debt. And when his fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were greatly distressed. And they all went and reported to their lord all that had taken place. And then the Lord summoned him and said to him, you wicked slave, I forgave you all that your debt because you pleaded with me. Did you not have mercy on your fellow slave as I had mercy on you? And in anger, the Lord handed him over to be tortured until he would pay his entire debt, because torture is a definite way to get your debts paid. And so my Heavenly Father, that's what I've clearly communicated with my mortgage company. So my Heavenly Father will also do to every one of you, if you do not forgive your brother or sister from your heart.
Sounds like good news.
It's clear good news. I don't know what else.
So I love people are like, you know, the Old Testament's so harsh, but that's why I like the New Testament and Jesus.
It's just the New Testament. Really nice. Jesus. Love and peace, man.
Love and peace.
It's there are a couple of kind of like contemporary society like moral things happening here, right? Like everything happens for a reason. And here we got, just got pay it forward. It's like this is the reading. You could play the clip from the I Think You Should Leave. Have you seen this, Matt? Where the character tries to start a pay it forward chain at a fast food restaurant. And then he hits the gas as hard as he can to squeal around to the back. And he starts ordering 55 burgers, 55 hot dogs to take advantage of the pay it forward chain.
Oh, it's real. Yeah. It's real.
55 fries, 55 tots, 55. So good. You got the pay it forward vibes, right? Be cool because I've been cool to you. It's part of it for sure. That's basically good news, right? Not bad. Really
good news, yeah. Yeah, I mean, once again, I think like the parts where God gets angry, I think it's always worth paying attention to what God gets angry about. And here, once again, we just see, you know, here's a story that is pretty serious about things like forgiveness. And I think a story that is pretty serious about, there's a remember piece of this, right? It isn't just forgiveness as like, here's this abstract value that you should hold to, but rather like you have received so much grace. I mean, that's the piece Jesus doesn't quite like say to Peter, but says to him through this story is that like, well, how many times have you been forgiven for all the dumb things that you've done or said? And so there's that remember piece. Yeah.
I mean, there's a connection, right? That the debt you owe is like mercy, is your, is your debt to be paid. Which, if I was still in Colorado, I could have a THC infused product and think about how that works. That like, your debt is debtlessness, right? Like it's,
yeah.
There's a really cross-shaped like Lutheran thing there, right? Of like your freedom. I mean, it's you know, free of all, servant of all, kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's this sense too that like, yeah, this is not a super warm and fuzzy story, but it is almost holding up. Okay, here's one way to be. It's like Dr. King called the spiral of violence, and we get this picture of the spiral of violence. This is what it looks like. Like if you really want to do this, like how many times should I forgive? And like this is the world that leads to. Is that what you want? And if you don't, maybe we should go in a different direction than punishment and torture.
Yeah. You know, there's plenty to hit here with the actual debt part. There's very different debt systems these days versus the ancient Near East. We do not have debtor's prison, which on one hand sounds good, but I'm not sure if it's like that great, like that we don't have debtor's prison.
Bring back debtor's prison?
Bring back debtor's prison is what this podcast official stance has been for 7 years now. Not just 7 years, but 7 years.
I mean, it's very different in the ancient Near East. Yes. And also, like, we do have all these ways now, though, that we, like, that we throw people, we expect people to pay fines for things, right? And that is its own regressive, like, punishes the poor much more than it punishes people that can afford to pay those things. And sometimes people do end up in prison as a result of, like, not being able to pay.
I think
is a different thing than the ancient Near East, but is a similar like we punish the poor kind of thing.
Yeah, I think I'd make the argument that we have systems in place that are regressive in imprisoning people in debt, but we don't have like many of whom perhaps would be willing to go to jail to experience freedom from that debt, right? Like putting people into a prison that you have to drive by every day and be like, oh, that's the debtor's prison, would be a different way of society reckoning with the role of debt and how that holds people captive.
I think, yeah,
right. It's, yeah, like the whole idea that you can't go bankrupt, you can't declare bankruptcy for student loans. It's insane. Like, we have society have like determined that like it's really good idea to not let people, like, there needs to be debt forgiveness for society to work, right? So we have go find your Planet Money episode about bankruptcy and how it's good for the economy, right? Because otherwise the economic system would be incredibly conservative. You wouldn't take any risk because if it goes wrong, you're going to be in debt forever, right? Yeah. But somehow like that doesn't apply to the medical system, right?
Right. Like, yeah. Yeah. No, that's what I don't understand. I don't know how you can get, maybe this is one thing people find objectionable about church, that you could go to church and hear this text and then Monday morning be like, no, I'm voting against debt forgiveness, student loan forgiveness. No, that is a horrible idea. We cannot do that. And meanwhile, you just went to church and heard this text. What do you think this text means?
A thing St. Aidan's did a while back that I thought was really cool. And I don't know, for me, it's one of the frustrating things about the tides as they're moving, Matt, you know, like as churches get smaller, like one downside is you lose some of like the mobility effectiveness of like, let's mobilize this network, right? And we'll have significant impact.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean as much as it used to. But you know, you can buy debt.
Yeah.
For like fractions of what the actual debt is, right? So I think it was Lent or whatever, the special offering was just to buy and forgive medical debt.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't a ton, right?
But yeah,
just revealing, you know, I mean, you're forgiving that debt, so you're participating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're participating in the work of God in the world, which is because the work of God is forgiving debts.
Yeah.
Before you jump to the metaphors, and there's lots of metaphorical stuff here, God says forgive debts.
Yeah.
Because these slaves, servants, these doulas are not concerned about their metaphorical debts.
Right.
That's not what happened in that story. It's real debt in real jail, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Get there. Plenty there. But before we get there, let's focus on what's actually happening. It's real debt, real money that people owe people.
Yeah.
But then also the whole congregation is like learning that you can buy $1,000 of medical debt for $100. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and you should definitely tell that story. And then the thing that you should tell some stories about debt forgiveness. I've done that in sermons. It really resonates. And then the thing that pops into my head is, we were in response though. It's like, I mean, you could forgive debt like one time, but like, you're just going to encourage bad behavior. I mean, what if people do it again? What if they do it like seven times? Like, are you still going to forgive their financial debt? Their financial debt if they do it seven times? That's just encouraging bad behavior, right, Jesus? I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
It's really great when you take it away from metaphorical debt into a real debt. It's a nice move. Nice move.
Bang!
Well, what are we metaphorically listening to?
Matt, I haven't sought it out, but Olivia Rodrigo's new album, Guts, it's huge right now, Matt, because it's found its way to me. I don't know. It just keeps showing up in places, especially like, I think it's the lead single and it's pretty, it's super poppy. You're going to love it. It's great. Bad idea, right? It's a bad idea, right? Have you heard it, Matt? Have you listened to it?
I've not heard it. I got to check it
out. Oh, you should put it on. It's a bad idea, right? And so I can hear the brothers of Joseph say to each other before, like, this is a bad idea, right? Before they seek reconciliation here. It's one of the part of the soundtracks there. We didn't get into it very much, but you have to forgive from your heart, which is worth exploring. And I imagine that means a little bit more than just in your emotive sense, right? But the center of being, which is a fullness idea, not just like a segmented part of yourself that's disconnected from your wallet. So I don't know. We don't have official podcast policies. Who can go on the playlist or not on the playlist? So it's hadn't been in the news recently, so I think it's going to be okay. Because this album was really good, 808 and the Heartbreaks, and the song is perfect. How could you be so heartless? Like, is the hook? It's Kanye, okay. But it's really good. And it fits this week, so I'm putting it on.
All right.
Everyone, take your own.
I think it's just yay. I think you gotta call him yay. Like, excuse me.
Don't want to disrespect. Yay. And finally, I've been doing, still been cruising through Jimmy Buffett stuff.
Nice.
If you're looking for some good, weird, lit stuff, you should check out Spencer Hall and Holly Anderson, who I know through college football things. They started a ridiculous website called Every Day Should Be Saturday. Pivoted that into the Shutdown Fullcast, which is a podcast of, it's like if Hunter S. Thompson spent an hour every week with his friends loosely talking about college football. They've got a weekly newsletter called Channel 6 that you can subscribe to, where they write, and both of them wrote these like essays and dialogue about Jimmy Buffett interspersed with songs, and so it got me onto it. And one of the tracks was Jimmy Buffett's cover of Uncle John's Band. It was not as good as I wanted it to be, but still fits the vibe I think we're trying to go for. As rough as that gospel sounds at the end, I think you can hear some Uncle John's Band playing in the background, maybe with a little steel drums.
Nice. Nice. Good stuff. Well, in the interest of taking this out of metaphorical debt into actual financial debt, let's do Rihanna's It's Better Have My Money. Pay what you owe. When he says pay what you owe, how do you not think pay me what you owe me? which also what an insane single. Like, this was a single on the radio, and it's great. So if you want that feeling, we might not think that is a practice that we would gospelly recommend, and yet this is the feel of what he's saying. So if you want the feel of this gospel, put on Rihanna's
You can't blame us for the songs on the playlist. You have to blame the gospels.
Yeah. Another way I would take this out of metaphorical prison and into actual prison, maybe listen to a prison song. Even Johnny Cash's Folsom Prison Blues, preferably live at Folsom Prison, which makes it even better. It's a Stone Cold classic, and you don't need me to wax poetic about it. But I do think it fits a text like this, because if you want to just, again...
Hold on a second, I'm writing that down. You said it was
John Cash. So good.
John Credit Card.
You want to talk about being in prison? You got to listen to a prison song. And then as we're talking about Love and Peace, it just makes me think of the U2 song from How to Dismantle an Atomic Bomb, Love and Peace or Else, which is also, I feel like, the feel of this gospel, which is Love and Peace or Else. You get... torture and violence. And finally, if you do need a song about forgiveness, we would be remiss to not put Don Henley's The Heart of the Matter. But if you don't need just another old white guy singing The Heart of the Matter, India RE has a beautiful cover of
Denver Zone.
This song about forgiveness. Is she really Denver Zone? I didn't know that.
Denver Wright.
Awesome.
Went to high school with Don Cheadle. East High School.
Wow. Awesome. There you go.
I like it, man. Some good tunes to spin.
All right. Are you ready for your homework for next week?
Oh, I can't wait till I get it. Hope it's behind some paywalls.
It's behind the Netflix paywall. Do you have Netflix, Zach?
I do. I do have Netflix.
Okay, good. Then I want to do password sharing. Have you seen Beef?
I've not seen Beef. Is it good?
Yeah. Okay. So here's your homework. They're only like 30, 35 minute episodes. Okay. You gotta watch the first. There's 10 episodes total. I haven't gotten that far, but just watch the first three, because by episode three you get into there's some religious content, which is just you got to see it. But you need the first two episodes to really get where it's going. So the first three episodes of Beef, watch it and let's talk about it.
Here's my TV talk for the week, Matt. I was really excited. We've been tightening the belt. And I've been rearranging the things. I was really proud of myself, Matt, because currently my cell phone bill, you ready for this? $30 a month for two lines.
Yeah, that's impressive.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And I was trying to see ways I could lower things and took a long, hard look in the mirror. I've been a YouTube TV subscriber since like day one.
Mm-hmm.
But they're up 75, like 80 bucks right now.
It's pretty high.
And Hulu Live was 70 bucks and it included the Disney ESPN Plus bundle that I was already paying for.
Right.
For $15 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, well, I'm going to go from like 95 to 70. That's, I got to do it. So I made the switch to Hulu Live with Disney Plus, ESPN Plus. And the 3 days later, I got an email from Hulu that said, we're changing our prices. Still cheaper, but I felt taken.
Yeah.
Definitely felt taken. The week I switched, they were like, we're raising prices.
Still cheaper though. See, this is why people come to this podcast, for money saving tips to help you get out of debt faster. Just again, fits the text.
I had to buy a new TV, speaking of debt, because TV did not survive a transcontinental journey in a truck.
All right, maybe don't come to this podcast for money saving tips.
Driven by a truck driver who wanted to be in North Carolina very badly. So I had to buy them, but it came with 3 months of Apple TV, Matt. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
So I got free Apple TV right now. After Party. Have you seen After Party?
No.
It's very good.
Is it good? I like
it a lot. Good. You got to check it out. I did start with season two by accident, and it was very disorienting because they like were referencing, I thought it was an artistic choice. They're referencing stuff that had clearly happened in the past, but I was like, oh, is this an interesting way to like build in a prequel, right? Like where you're just like, we're just not going to let the audience in on some stuff that happened that clearly did, that everyone else in the show knows about. No, I just started watching season two, episode one. I really like it. Check it out. Very good.
Good.
Scott, what's his face from Veep and the Detroiters, who's the other side of the, he's done a lot of the, I Think You Should Leave stuff because he's done stuff with that guy.
Gotcha. Well, it's been real.
Real vinyl.
Ooh.